Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Favorite time of the week, we get to talk college football with Matt Baker. We've got bowl season. We've got the Gasparilla Bowl right here in Tampa tonight. Florida UCF get together at Raymond James. Matt, it probably gets better than this, but hey, this is the mythical state championship, so... What are you looking forward to in this one? You won't get to look forward to Anthony Richardson. He clearly is out.
Correct. No Anthony Richardson. Florida's had a couple other opt-outs or transfers. Leading tackler Mahmoud Diabate is not going to play. He's in the transfer portal. Zach Carter, one of the best defensive linemen for the Gators, he is also out. He opted out. He's getting ready for the NFL, the Hillsboro high school product. So I don't know what to make of the Gators. Rick, it's just a weird situation surrounding them. Let's be real. The starting quarterback is going to be Emory Jones, who has told people that we talked about this, was it last week? He's entering the transfer portal after this. So this is going to be his last hurrah before he transfers to school X. So that's kind of weird, right? Like, you know that transfers are going to happen. That's a thing. But to have it be kind of out there, it's just kind of weird. I'm not blaming Emory by any means. Emory doesn't have to play in this game, but he's choosing to. And certainly it behooves him to make it known that he's going to be out there in the portal, because there's a lot of really good quarterbacks there. And he wants, it's important for schools to know that he's going to be on the market soon. So if they fit what he's looking for and vice versa, they know he's available. It's just kind of a weird layer. Then you talk about, obviously, the transition with coaching staff. Greg Knox is still the interim coach. He said he's talked with Billy Napier for about 10 minutes. I think he said he had a 10-minute meeting with him. So that's kind of weird, right? I asked Damian Pierce, the running back, about it yesterday. He's like, all the coaches are being professional. It's not like, they're fighting or punching each other or anything like that. They're all being professional. But we know what's going on. We're not dumb. So it's going to be, I think what we see, remember last year with the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma, Dan Mullen said afterward, that wasn't the 2020 team y'all saw out there. That was the 2021 team. We're getting a kickstart. I think this is going to be more of the 2021 team than what to expect from 2022. Practices have been the same with the Gators. Not like there's been any wholesale changes. There are some changes with the roster, but not a ton. But just in terms of what it looks like, it's going to look more like 2021 rather than what you can expect 22 to look like. But there's so many changes, I don't know what to make. I just don't know what to make of this.
It is a weird one. I mean, even with Emory Jones, I mean, good for Emory Jones. If he doesn't get hurt, he gets to audition for every other team in America. By the same token, where the Gators have been better served, I know Richardson is out, so that takes away that option. But is there another quarterback that they might want to have seen? I mean, this game... in the end, doesn't mean anything, except the Florida fans are going to pay good money probably to go see it. So it's just strange, guys in a transfer portal, and you're a Gator fan, you're like, yay, we don't have him. If he goes out there and throws for 300 and runs for 100, it's going to be a real mixed emotional day for Gator fan, you know what I mean?
They do have, obviously, they have backups. Carlos Del Rio Wilson and Jalen Kitna are both freshmen. I don't think either one is going to be ready to take on a starring role and a starting role against a pretty decent UCF team. So Emory Jones is the option, right? He is. That's who they got. My hope, look, I don't tell people how to spend their money or boo or not boo or anything like that. But my hope is that Florida fans would appreciate what Emory has done. And I'm going to be writing that in the Tampa Bay Times and TampaBay.com. He hasn't been the savior that people thought he might be. He was a blue chip recruit, the first big get for Dan Mullen, poaching him from Urban Meyer in Ohio State. He hasn't been a superstar, but he's been steady and he's contributed a lot over the years. And I think he's handled everything as well as you could expect. And I thought the same way about Kyle Trask and how he handled things. Obviously, Trask had more success, but it's not easy to be a 21-year-old kid or whatever, 21-year-old student, and thrown into a situation where there's a quarterback controversy. And you finally get your chance, and the guy behind you is probably better than you. And then you've got people, you know, upset with you and booing you and all that stuff. But Emory's handled this as well as you could hope a young adult would handle it. And I think for that, he deserves a lot of credit. And my hope is that Florida fans recognize that in the Gasparilla Bowl at Ray J and treat him accordingly.
Are there, this is a long shot question, so don't, it's just me, but are there any early suitors I don't know if they make odds on this in Las Vegas, but like, where are some of the places, what kind of schools are we looking at for Emory Jones? I mean, he was a blue chip coming out. He has played. He has experience. It's not as if he can't help somebody right away.
He can definitely help somebody right away. The problem is that the transfer portal is loaded with quarterbacks. I mean, we've already seen Slovis transfer from USC to Pitt, and Spencer Rattler go from Oklahoma to South Carolina. And there's just a glut of really good quarterbacks who didn't work out at my first school. I'm going to go to my second or third in some cases. So I do think he's an intriguing name. He is very talented. He's quite good with his legs, and he's got a good enough arm as well. The interceptions are going to be something that scares away some teams for sure. But this wasn't the best situation this year, and that's not all on him. So I don't know what level necessarily. I mean, I don't think he's going to drop to an FCS school. Is he going to go to like another Power 5 school? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But he'll have a home somewhere. I'm confident that somebody's going to see that this guy is a talented player and can come in, bring some immediate experience and leadership to my locker room and make a difference in the 22 season.
Matt, I was happy to see 2020 end, and then 2021 came along and said, oh, yeah, hold my beer. And so here we are at the end of a long college football season, which was played with fans and all of that. But this new variant is sweeping the country. The NHL has shut down. Who knows what the NFL is going to do? They've had a game every day this week. So you go down to the University of Miami, who is now in full COVID protocol. They have a Sun Bowl game on New Year's Eve against Washington State. I don't know if that one's going to be played. And I mean, can't we anticipate this might happen for the next couple of weeks or week or so?
Yes, absolutely. I have a vested interest in the Washington State Miami game. I'm actually wearing, I don't wear like team gear because I don't root for teams. Right. The one exception I make, I'm currently wearing a Washington State University Pep Band long sleeve T-shirt because I'm friends with a couple of the band directors out there, and obviously they're trying to figure out what's going on, and are we going to El Paso next week? Are we not? I don't know. So I have a personal stake in what happens there. I don't know what's happening. As we record this, it's 9:14 on Wednesday morning. Miami and the Sun Bowl are supposed to talk later today to try and figure out just where are we? Where are things? How severe is there an outbreak? How severe is it? What position groups are hit? You know, just the basic stuff that teams went through all the time last year and figure out, is the game playable or not? The Sun Bowl director was talking to the Miami Herald and said, like, you know, I just bought 187 pounds of steak or whatever for some sort of thing that they do with the teams, the Sun Bowl. And, you know, if the game cannot be played, then obviously you'll have to eat the cost, no pun intended, and donate it to charity or something. But so their Sun Bowl is assuming the game will be played, but we'll see whether that's possible. And it's not the only school. I mean, Texas A&M, according to I think it was a 247 outlet that covers the Aggies. A&M is dealing with some COVID issues as well, and before they play Wake Forest in the Gator Bowl up in Jacksonville. So this is where we are right now. I mean, the numbers are going up in Florida and going up a lot across the country. I don't know what all is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. I know that I am, you know, I'm fully vaccinated and boosted. I will be wearing my mask indoors a lot more than I had been in the fall when things kind of relaxed a little bit. But I'm hoping that, you know, the game, the Gasparilla Bowl feels somewhat normal. And I'm covering the Cotton Bowl semifinal and the national championship game. And I'm hoping all the access and everything leading up to it feels normal as well with just with masks.
Look, I ask this because I don't know. And you know, with the NFL, they've switched protocols. They were testing vaccinated players once a week. They were testing unvaccinated every day. A little different because it's negotiated with the union, et cetera. In college football, does it take a breakout before they begin testing, or are they just assuming that, or are these guys tested regularly just to see? I mean, with this variant, sometimes there's no symptoms. Do they wait for them to be sent? I mean, like, there's not a governing body for COVID testing in college football, right?
Correct. It's a conference by conference thing,
gotcha.
where every conference kind of came up with its own guidelines. That's why you saw situations where, like, there were slightly different protocols in terms of how many players did you have to have available to play a game. Some, right. It was like, if you have X number, and some was, you need to have at least, I'm making the numbers up, 5 defensive linemen and 6 offensive, that type of thing. So everybody did it a little bit differently, and that included testing. I don't remember any of the specifics off the top of my head, because frankly, I tried to flush that down in 2020, throw that down the memory hole, forget it happened, and move along. I certainly did not think that we would be sitting here having this conversation, right. and you asking a very good question that I just don't know the answer to right now.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're all trying to figure it out as we go along, so there is no real certain answer for sure. Before we get to talk a little bit about the National College Football Semifinals here that will be played on New Year's Eve.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I did want to ask you a question about Urban Meyer. Look, he spent, you know, his entire career, illustrious career, certainly one of great achievement, unparalleled by most in college football, with national championships at Florida, Ohio State, you know, all of that. Undeniable the impact he had and the success, anyway, in college football. Now we've had this situation in Jacksonville. Certainly there was mistake after mistake. The NFL game clearly did not fit Urban Meyer, and I can say with some certainty I don't think you'll see him in the National Football League again. What about college football, though? Certainly we know he could maybe Fox hires him back for Big Noon TV and all that. But in terms of, if Urban Meyer wanted to, if he wanted to coach college football, do you think there are so many places, right, so many teams, what kind of level of program would he be able to work at, do you believe? Or has he been damaged to some point?
He's definitely been damaged. I don't think there's any question about that. So there's two parts to your question.
Mm-hmm.
One is, what level would take him? I don't think a Florida State, Georgia, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, the elite jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they would take him. I would find that pretty hard to believe. Dude's won 3 national championships, but there's a lot of baggage there too. And things got, I mean, Florida was not in good shape when he left. Ohio State was able to continue going on because Ohio State is recession proof, and they're the only school in the country that seems to be recession proof. But things just got really bad and really awkward, and he burned out so fast. And obviously, everything that's happened on off the field with the Jags, I don't see him getting a job at an elite program. Okay, so then we go to what's next. Would a lower level P5, a Washington State, Kansas State, somebody like that take? Maybe. I would think it would. I would think, honestly, it's some random G5 school that would take him, with some AD who's like, I need to make a splash. Nobody here cares about our program. We're irrelevant. The way to do that is to hire a big name, honestly, kind of like what Kansas did with Les Miles to some degree. Do something like that and try to get a big splash. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one. You know, there's, what, 130 D1 schools in the country, something like that. Changes every year. All it takes is one. So that's the one part. Now, the other part is, what kind of job would Urban Meyer want to take? Mm. He has a little bit of an ego, is my understanding.
What do you think?
So, yeah, just a tiny bit. So would he take, I'm just making this up, would he take a job at Florida International or Akron or Eastern Michigan? No, probably not. I don't see that working. I don't see him wanting that. I would see him wanting a good to really good job. And I don't think that's going to happen. At his age, I don't think he's going to want to like start at the bottom at Bowling Green and work his way up. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other component to this is Urban was a control freak. That's what he did. And you can't do that in college football anymore. You can't do it in the NFL because the guys are professionals. They have a union. They don't mind telling you to screw off and that sort of thing. They're professionals. College, you can still be to some degree the dictator, I guess. But there's also the transfer portal where, you know what, screw this. I don't need this anymore. I'm going somewhere else. This guy doesn't work for me. You have that agency. You have more agency with name, image, and likeness and that sort of thing. So it's the game that he left when he left Ohio State is not the game that it is now. And it's certainly not the game it was when he was ruling the sport at Florida. So I don't know that he would work in college football anymore. And I would think he could recognize that, but I don't know that to be true. But I certainly think the athletic directors and presidents who would make that hire, because let's not forget, presidents are involved in this too, and they know what happened. So the presidents and ADs who would make that decision, I think they would be – they're smart enough to realize that the way he won is not the way you're going to win anymore.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, listen, players are becoming more empowered. We hear a lot about mental illness. We hear about bullying, all that stuff. I think you're right. I think the relationships and the way Urban has gone about his job is fading out a little bit, and probably a lot in some circles. But undeniable, he's a big name, and there would be some athletic director out there that would want to maybe take a swing at him, but I don't mean that in a literal sense, but I think that, that was a bad choice of words, but I literally think that, he's not going to take, like you said, Kansas State, right? He's not going to go to Colorado, that sort of thing. So best option is probably back on the Big Noon broadcast on Fox, I would imagine, if they'll have him. So we'll see where he winds up. Okay, so the national semifinals, you are headed to the Cotton Bowl, where it will be Cincinnati and Alabama, and then, of course, we got Michigan and Georgia in the orange. So let's go ahead and start with the Cotton. Look, for all the world, we finally got a team in there, right? The Bearcats, that they said it couldn't happen, and it did. But their prize for that is playing an Alabama team that is as good as anybody when the season ended. So what would they have to do just surfacey to try to pull off an upset like this in the Cotton Bowl?
So I actually think Cincinnati in some ways matches up better against Bama than Georgia did. And what I mean by that, Cincinnati's got really good corners. Ahmad Gardner and Kobe Bryant are really good. Their secondary is very good. And when you look at the strength of Alabama, it's been Bryce Young and the receivers. Mechie is out, which is going to ding Alabama's receiving corps some. But the Ohio State transfer, Jamison, is fantastic, All-American guy. So I think that matchup is Alabama probably is favored, but it's closer than you might think. And Cincinnati, Desmond Ridder's a really, really good quarterback who's seen a lot of ball and won a lot of games. So, and that's certainly an edge over what Georgia had with Stetson Bennett. So it's not a terrible matchup. The problem, of course, is Alabama's got tremendous, a lot more depth, a lot more talent across the board than Cincinnati does. So I think Cincinnati has a chance. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they've got a chance to be competitive here. And if they're competitive, then who knows what happens in a four-quarter game. My hope with this is that, let's say Cincinnati gets blown out, which is a total possibility. My hope is that the college football system, fans, media, prognosticators, all that stuff, don't look at this and say, well, this is proof. You know, finally a group of five team gets in and they get the doors blown off them by Alabama. USC, they should have been playing in the Sugar Bowl or whatever.
Yeah.
No. Alabama's really, really good. And I got news for you. I've covered some semifinals. They're almost all bad. When Alabama played Clemson in the national title game here, I was at the Peach Bowl semifinal where they kicked the crap out of a Washington team that had Vita Vea on it. I don't think Washington crossed the 50 until like the fourth quarter or something like that. Alabama's kicked the crap out of Notre Dame before. They had a somewhat close Orange Bowl against Oklahoma, but it wasn't really that close. I was at the first playoff, 59-20. Florida State lost to Oregon, and somehow it didn't even feel that close. Like the games are usually blowouts in the semifinal for one reason or another. So let's not pretend like just if Cincinnati gets blown out, and I'm not saying that they will, let's not pretend like this proves something about Group of Five versus P5. No, that proves that Alabama is really good. And shoot, last year Alabama kicked the crap out of Ohio State in the national championship game. And no one was like, well, see, Ohio State doesn't belong. No, Alabama's really, really good. They win almost every national championship. So That's my hope about a 30,000-foot view. It's a referendum on this Cincinnati team and this Alabama team, not on the next round of Cincinnati or UCF or whoever it's going to be in the future.
That's a great point. These national semifinals with powerhouse programs, name programs, brand programs like Notre Dame, have not been close, and so you can't then hold a different standard to Cincinnati if Alabama is Alabama on that day, and they're likely to be. And boy, I just go back, man, that game against Auburn, I keep thinking about that comeback that they had, and where how life might have been different for them and so many other teams if they don't pull that out. So but here they are again, the Crimson Tide with a chance to win another national title, and Nick Saban, of course, no stranger to that. Okay, the one that I'm looking even more forward to, and nothing against the Cincinnati-Alabama game that you will be covering, is Michigan-Georgia. Because, look, I didn't see this coming necessarily this year because I didn't think that Jim Harbaugh was ever going to beat Ohio State. And the way they did it is impressive. And I mean that Michigan has turned into an extremely physically imposing against, your will. We're going to run the ball. We're going to do things and stop you on the line of scrimmage, on both sides, really. And it's been impressive to watch them do that. They play a Georgia team that got stung, but is very, very good in their own right and certainly has a great defense. This seems like a really close game to me on paper. Matt, I'm looking forward to this game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that one. It's going to be – this is one of those where they're very close, I think, in the way they play. They're both going to do a lot of they're both going to run the ball. They're both going to try to stop the run. The strength, I think, on both teams is just the lines and kind of the front seven on defense and the offensive line. It's going to be kind of old school football. I think honestly that favors Georgia. Georgia's got more depth. They got more dudes and. Just like I think that the matchup with Alabama and Cincinnati gives Cincinnati at least somewhat of a chance, I think this matchup, I think Georgia's just a better version of Michigan, honestly. Michigan deserves to be the 2 seed. I'm not taking anything away from that. But I think when you look, kind of stack them up top to bottom, Aiden Hutchinson will probably be the best player on the field, the Michigan edge rusher. But Georgia's got a lot of guys who are going to be 2 through 7 or 8 when you start lining them up. And I think Georgia is going to be able to stop the run that Michigan's quite good at. And then it's a question of whether Michigan's going to be able to pass the ball effectively enough to win. And I'm not sure that they're going to be able to. So I give Georgia the edge there. But I think that's going to be we talked about how there haven't been good playoff games. I think this one's going to be an exception. I don't think it's going to be the most aesthetically pleasing game. It's not going to be like the fantastic Georgia Oklahoma Rose Bowl that went to like double OT in 2017, I guess it was. I don't think it's going to be like that, but I think this has potential to be a really close, just bruising, brutal, fun game to watch.
And if everything plays out by chalk, that would seem to mean that we'd have a rematch of the Alabama-Georgia SEC final, which isn't the worst thing in the world. But the rest of the nation would groan, I'm sure,
yep.
And go, oh, here we are, SEC. Oh, yeah, by the way, you got Texas and Oklahoma coming soon, too. Look, I would watch it. I don't know that Georgia has enough to get past Alabama, you know, and you know, turn the tables on them in the final. But, you know, that's why they play the games. But there's got to be SEC fatigue in college football right now, right? Among its fans, anyway.
Of course.
If you're not an SEC fan, you're just it's like the Patriots with Tom Brady every year.
Well, then beat them. Here's your chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's your chance. Cincinnati, yeah. Rise up and do this. I mean, it would be one of the if Cincinnati's able to do this, it would be one of the greatest stories in the the last 30 years of this sport, maybe more than that. And Michigan absolutely has a, like I said, I favor Georgia in that game, but Michigan has a chance. They have a very real chance. I would not be shocked at all if Michigan pulls it off and then goes to Indy for the national championship game. So if you don't like the SEC winning all the time, here's your chance. Do something about it. You're right. The SEC fatigue is real and it has been real, but nobody keeps knocking them off. So, and you're right. It's going to get more extreme when Texas and Oklahoma come. And the other part of this too is that's still looming out there is college football playoff expansion. At some point, I do think it's going to happen. I believe the Council of Elders, I don't remember what managing commissioner, I don't remember what their stupid name is, but the people who actually like decide what the playoff does, those people are supposed to be meeting around the national championship. And I think there's a chance that maybe they actually figure this thing out and expand it to 12, which would be fantastic. Yeah, the SEC is going to get more teams in there, but it's going to be a chance for Big Ten teams and Big 12 and Pac 12 and whoever else to make a run to upset some of these guys. When you have to play it out a little longer, it just gives you more opportunities to knock off a Georgia. Maybe there's a bad matchup against Oregon, I don't know, whoever it is. And maybe to kind of end some of that SEC fatigue. And if nothing else, it makes more teams relevant for longer, both in terms of the regular season and in the postseason as well. So I'm still optimistic that they're going to resolve their really minor differences and make that happen sooner rather than later. But there is nothing easy about this stupid sport, which is part of why it's so much fun.
It's been a lot of fun this year, and I think these games are going to be fun too. Matt, before you go, I was surprised to learn. Well, I shouldn't say I was surprised to learn, but you have a new member of the family, and I'm just curious, like how that's working out, because I've done what you've done before. It's been many years, and we don't have pets right now. But so now a little cat has crawled into your life, huh?
That's correct. So I grew up with cats and dogs. I'm cool with both. But my wife has been anti-cat. The 4-year-old a couple times has asked for a cat, and my wife's like, no, I don't want a cat. Cats are stupid. but one of our friends found a cat, a stray, kind of came to their house. They kept him for a little bit, but their cat did not get along with the new cat. So she was sending us pictures, and my wife kind of gave me that look. I'm like, you really want a cat, don't you? You want to do this. And then we brought him in to see how it worked with the dog, and the answer is not very well, but it doesn't matter because my wife and kid, and let's face it, me too, we're all smitten with Charlie. So, yes, we have a new addition, Charlie. He and the dog, Reggie, sometimes get along. Charlie spends a lot of his day, actually, in the office with me on the desk, curled up, sleeping, occasionally jumping on the computer. So if you ever see a weird tweet from me, like a bunch of X's and Q's or whatever, Charlie sends his love.
Charlie could probably make better tweets than I have, I can tell you that, based on my feed. But that's interesting. Well, they've learned to coexist, and sometimes that's the best you can hope for, right? I mean, dogs and cats living together, right? It's not perfect, but it's good they've kind of carved out their own niches here. So
yeah, exactly right. The dog keeps still keeps trying to eat the cat food, and we still got issues here to resolve. But it's resolved enough to where they're coexisting, and Charlie's not going anywhere. I can assure you of that.
Well, good for Charlie. He's found a home. He's found a good home, and the Bakers have a new addition to the family. So, happy holidays to Reggie and Charlie and all of you, Matt. Thanks so much for all you've done throughout the season with college football. We hope to talk to you again about the national championship, certainly after the games for sure. But in the meantime, safe travels, man, and happy New Year.
Sure. Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas.
All right, we'll update all the Bucs injuries. Man, they got a slew of them, of course. Leonard Fournette, Lavonte David, not going to play for the remainder of the regular season. What is Mike Evans' status? We'll have to check on all of that with the Bucs. Just so many injuries from that Saints game. See who they have available for the Carolina Panthers coming up the day after Christmas on Sunday. So we'll preview all of that, as well as some more of your mailbag questions, which we didn't have a chance to get to. We will do that on tomorrow's podcast. My thanks again to Matt Baker. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.